Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions or any comments that you would like to make this evening during the show, you can feel free to either call them in at area code 646-716-4893. And if you're feeling a little radio shy, you're welcome to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So our guest will be joining us in just a few moments. I have a very special guest tonight that I know you're going to love hearing. And her name is Marianne Glynn. And Marianne is a post-traumatic stress disorder specialist, and she's done magnificent work in this field. And we'll be hearing all about her app program that she has to help you get through the day. And what is post-traumatic stress disorder? And a lot of times we think of it as something that's related to war, but that definition has definitely changed over the years, and Marianne will be talking to us about that. Before Marianne gets here, I want to talk to you a little bit about some upcoming announcements, such as our Healing Weekend that's going to be in Virginia, and that's coming up for April 23rd and 24th. Our Healing Weekends are really dynamic. The women who come there are just like you. They're women who need to heal, who need to hear how to move ahead in life. We have some wonderful bonding sessions and friendships that last a lifetime. You know, I made friends with some of our women. It's been over, I guess, 12 years since I'm doing this. And friendships that have been made at these weekends, they just continue on. And it's wonderful having support. I mean, that is the whole purpose here, is that people need to be supported while they're going through this. So if you're interested in coming to our Healing Weekend, all you have to do is write to me at bonk@aol.com, or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and you'll see a link there to write to me if you're interested in coming to the conference. So without further ado, Marianne is just getting on, and let me bring her into this conversation. Just hold on for one moment. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I know that you have your own things going on Sunday night, so I really appreciate it.
My
pleasure.
And
Happy New Year to you, first of all.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. Marianne, we have, you know, a number of new listeners who have never heard you before, and some other listeners who are so excited that they're going to hear you again. So I just would like for you to give a little bit of an introduction about yourself, about what kind of therapy that you do and where people can contact you and get in touch with you.
Okay. I'm a clinical social worker, which is one type of psychotherapist. I have a psychotherapy practice in New Jersey. I do specialize in trauma. I do do EMDR. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. It's a technique used to help process trauma out of the brain. I also use hypnosis and other types of techniques that help move, mindfulness techniques that help move trauma through the body. And I also work with people who've been in destructive relationships. I have a website, www.destructiverelationshipshelp.com, and we have a live chat group every 3 weeks, which I just got off of just now. And I also hold a live group for people in destructive relationships in New Jersey.
And there certainly are a lot of people in that situation throughout the country, right?
It does seem to be that way, yes. Yeah, we were trying to...
You don't
to,
have
in
to look very far
other...
to find a destructive relationship.
Oh, my goodness. That is so true. Yeah. And we were talking in our group the other night about, is this something that's becoming more prominent, or was it always there and we just weren't as aware of it?
I think it's pretty much what you said. I think it's both. I think it was always there,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was just looked at differently. I was just having this conversation with some friends the other day that when I was growing up, and that was back in the 50s and 60s, we just thought people were odd or they were quirky or they had bad tempers. We didn't know from narcissism, sociopathy, borderline
mm-hmm.
personalities, you know, addictions, compulsive, you know, behaviors. None of those words had really been clearly defined.
That's
so
true.
I think that many times we made mistakes. And, of course, as women, which I'm dealing with pretty much primarily all women, that
mm-hmm.
a lot of times we make mistakes based on our own life experiences and lack of knowledge. And that's why I always tell women,
true.
You can't beat yourself up, because what we don't know, we don't know. And while
that's
other
right.
people say, well, you should have known, or why didn't you see it? Well, that's a really judgmental kind of statement to make, because we didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know
right.
a lot. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. And I that seems to be something that it's one of the primary things that people say to themselves at the end of a relationship in which there was deceit or they were somehow exploited. You know, why did I do, you know, how did I not see the signs? How could I have been so stupid? How could I have been so foolish? And that just kind of is very difficult to wrap the mind around. Plus, you may have lost many years in this relationship.
I think another problem
you can't
also
get them
is
back.
That that's the one thing I always tell women. You can't get back what you lose, so you have to stop losing and start moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I see another women, a problem with women is that we're always feel that we can make things better. I think many of us are caretakers. I think it's our nature.
Definitely.
And I think that people who are predators are prone to draw us into their lives because they need somebody to take care of them, or they know
mm-hmm.
they can control someone. And so they look
mm-hmm.
for kind, wonderful, nurturing women. I always say, you know, the only thing wrong with you is that you're too good, you know, so that
yes.
people look for, you know, this kind of profile. Would you say that's true?
Oh, it's absolutely true in every single case I have found, because, first of all, you know, they're looking for someone who they can control, right? And they're not that not that you're not, they wouldn't be looking for a strong person. It could be a very strong person. You could be a very accomplished person, have good self-esteem even. But they look for someone who's got kind of got a good heart, very compassionate and empathetic, just the opposite of them, so that they will kind of be loyal and stay with them and overlook things and try to help them and, you know, all that stuff.
Because I think basically we are caretakers, and we always feel that if something's wrong in the beginning, we keep thinking we can fix it. But the longer you live in a destructive relationship, the more you start, I think, internalizing that it's your fault. Now, that's what I find, that when you're being knocked down enough times, you start believing that.
Yeah, yeah, it's impossible not to. Yeah, yeah, just think of if in a normal situation where you're doing some task and someone who happens to be there might question it and say, oh, is it done like that? I think it's really supposed to be done like that. Most people will immediately think, if they have, you know, if they're honest at all, they think, oh, did I do, is it wrong? You know, they'll question themselves. Oh, well, let me, you know, see, are you right or am I right? You know, but if someone is constantly telling you you're wrong, you're going to start doubting yourself a lot, and that's going to chip away your self-esteem and your sense of self. And that's why I think that's why the self gets lost in these relationships, is because you're always kind of having to meet the demands of the other person's needs or walk on eggs, and you little by little lose who you are. You're not seen. You're being used. You're not even really a real human being to that other person.
Exactly. And I wanted to ask you, since you brought up the subject, I'm not quite sure where this comes in about men who are controlling. What is the psychology behind their thinking?
Well, there are different levels of men who are controlling. Deep down, you know, they may be, you know, if someone is very psychopathic, meaning that they are not, that means they're not in touch with themselves at all, and they don't have insight, they don't have, they're not very in touch with their feelings. They're not aware of what is driving them. You know, they're just aware, you know, they think, they look, see it like, well, there's just something wrong with you or something outside of me, you know, that or something else or you. They don't have any insight in or remorse about their behavior. You know, it really, though, deep down, it's deep inadequacy, I believe, but I don't believe they're in touch with that. But then you have some abusers who are in touch with that. And they're the ones who would be the more typical abusers that go through that cycle of abuse, you know, where they're, you know, feeling in love or romantic, whatever, and then they do something abusive, and then they feel some remorse, and then they want to come back and try to make it better. They're, I think, more aware of their inadequacy or their fears of abandonment. But then there are others who are very unaware. But it's in,
I think,
there,
in our case,
know,
it's
deep
kind
down,
of
buried in them.
And I think for women who have gay husbands, I don't know how, you know, predominant the situation is with other men. But I know with gay men, I always believe it's because they don't have control of their own lives. You know, they're living another life, and they really feel they have no control over that, and they're trying to live a lie. That the only way they can really keep that in check and in balance is to control the environment around them.
Yeah.
Because they don't want their secrets getting out. They don't want you being close with your family. They don't want your friends there. They want to kind of alienate you. And in that sense, many of them do control you. They control the environment that you're living in because they can't control their environment.
Well, that's true. Well, they're controlling, they're creating, well, are you talking about someone who is trying to, I mean, they know they're gay, but they're trying to pretend they're not.
Keep it a secret.
Right. Either keep it a secret or even maybe even believe they're not or pretend they're not or think they can not be somehow or ignore it in a sense. Yeah.
Well, I think the ones who are doing the controlling are those who recognize that it's in them, but they just don't want their secret getting out. And so they become very controlling in the sense that it's not uncommon to see some of them moving you around. So you won't be close to your family or starting arguments with your family to alienate them from coming over.
Oh, of course.
Or making your life so miserable, right?
Yeah, right. Because it's a lot to keep up, right?
Yes, it's exhausting.
Yes, you have to, you want to keep. They want to keep other people away, so that
They're afraid
also,
their secrets
I guess the
are going to be told.
So that you keep the secret, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because you can be beaten down, or if you can be controlled, then there's a better chance that you're going to believe what they believe, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think that, that's part of what I'm dealing with our women when we have control, but I just didn't know in general for men who aren't gay why they're so controlling.
Well, if we're talking about narcissists, psychopaths, sociopaths, whatever you want to call them, that's the only way they know how to relate. They all have, I haven't met one yet, where their partner doesn't describe that they were told by the person that they had a very traumatic childhood for some reason or other, or abusive
right.
childhood, and they somehow, and the only way they know how to relate is either as a victim or the person who's got the power. As a child, of course, they're the victim, but then when they grow up, it's almost like, I believe there is almost like, number one, they've learned to shut that, to dissociate growing up from the abuse. So dissociate means that in order to endure it, they have to kind of almost freeze or immobile, like kind of buckle under, so that they can get through it. And your women can understand being in an abusive relationship suppresses self. Well, a person who becomes what you might call a perpetrator also experiences the abuse and their self is suppressed. But then when they get older, they decide they want to be not the victim anymore. They want to be the person in control, and they kind of build their personality on that. They identify themselves with power, and that's the way they relate, the only way they relate. So if you get close to this person, too close to them, they are going to abuse you because, if you are too intimate with them, it has the power to threat to trigger their own childhood issues, and they won't let that happen.
Yeah,
so
that is very interesting.
In control. Does that make sense? That's a
it
bit
does.
Of a
I haven't heard that
concept.
Before, but that really does make sense. It's kind of like learned behavior in the sense if you come from something and you reproduce what you come from, but this time you're like in any other abuse situation. They say that 85% of all abuse came from parents who were abused themselves, and that's because of this learned behavior.
Nobody grows up to hurt other people unless they were hurt, unless they're angry underneath, If you grow up in a very loving environment, you're just not going to grow up and hurt people. It's just not going to happen. But, of course, you could be abused outside of the home, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sexually
abused.
Absolutely,
and I think
bullied.
Today with a lot of the bullying, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Kids in school are fearful.
And neglect is, believe it or not, worse than abuse when it comes to forming a callous person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually.
Which brings me to ask you another question that's come up in our support group. We always say that, emotional abuse, is the invisible abuse because you're not showing bruises on your arms or black eyes.
Right.
And that people don't really take it seriously because you don't look like you've been battered. But we really do believe that you can be more battered internally that way than if somebody would just smack you once or twice.
Absolutely. I think it's worse because you question it.
Mm-hmm.
When someone is hitting you, at least you know you're being hit. Even though you might want to somehow excuse it or put up with it or not let anyone talk you out of leaving this person, wherever you're at with that, at least you know you've been hit or smacked or whatever. But emotional abuse or manipulation is much harder. You can't see it, but so it's much harder to identify in yourself and take action. A manipulation and deceit make you kind of crazy, you know. It's kind of crazy making, because it makes you doubt yourself, and it makes you kind of feel off center all the time. You're never really sure what's going on, right? You're never really sure what's really true. So it just makes you doubt yourself.
And I agree with that. I know that in my marriage there was no physical abuse. My ex-husband never would, you know, put his hands on me to hurt me physically.
Mm-hmm.
But emotionally I was so battered down that I lost who I was in that, you know, relationship, because of the fact that I was just trying to exist and survive
mm-hmm.
from day to day. And I, you know, he took the strength out of me, that, and I was a strong woman, like you're saying. When you get married, I always tell women, it doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
because you're weak. I was very strong
right.
when I got married, and I was looking my best ever. You know, my self-esteem was at its highest place,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking for somebody who was strong, but
yeah.
I wasn't able to, you know, tell the difference between someone who was strong versus someone who was a bully. And
right.
I guess I just wasn't smart enough. I thought, you know, why would somebody want to be hurtful to me? Why would somebody want to be mean? You know,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, why would somebody purposely do this to you? So I started internalizing it, especially when he would, you know, start insulting me. I thought, you hear it day in and day out, and even though you don't think in the beginning that it's true, but after a while when you see they're miserable and making you miserable, you start thinking, well, like, maybe I am doing something wrong.
Right.
And that's
Right, isn't that responsible people, and especially the kind of women we're talking about, you know, these tend to be very responsible women, right, who get targeted,
mm-hmm.
because they will take responsibility, like a good person would do. I mean, that's a wonderful characteristic in a good relationship, that you look at yourself,
mm-hmm.
right, you take responsibility, and you say, oh, something went wrong, what was my part in it, right? I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
that's actually a good quality. But when someone is constantly blaming you, you know, or trying controlling or, you know, doing that, you start to question everything, like you're saying.
Yeah, I really lost all sense of who I was. I guess that's the best way
yeah.
I could describe it. And I always tell women that, you know, I really admire their bravery when they leave these relationships. The
mm-hmm.
only way I was able to leave my relationship is that my ex-husband walked out on me.
Yeah,
and
you were lucky,
he thought he would
right?
teach me a lesson. I was. He said, you know, if you're going to do this, then that's it. You're on your own. And I had two little babies at the time, and I really thought he left for good. I wasn't expecting him to show up a week later. But that 1 week just gave me that strength to say, no, you're not coming back.
Oh,
but I
that
think
was
it's,
awesome.
And I tell people that it's because I started strong. But look how many women come from dysfunction to start with. And so
yeah.
many times they tell me that they know that it's not perfect, the relationship they're getting into, but it's better than what they're coming from.
Yeah.
That's their sense of normal.
Well, that's pretty classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it really is.
Going
it was
from,
for me, too.
Right. It's what you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, we all have, you know, we all come from, well, not all, most of us come from families where there's some dysfunction or abuse, neglect, addiction, you know, all kinds of different things. And when we gravitate toward a life partner, we're not really doing it as consciously as we think, you know. Our subconscious is really driving it, and we're gravitating towards someone who's familiar. So if we came from a family in which didn't get a lot of love and nurturing, we're going to pick someone who is not able to give us that, even though we're not aware of it at the time. It comes out later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Comes out. However, if you have two pretty fairly honest people who have some ability to attach or trust, you can work through those things. But if you're with someone who can't even be honest about who they are, it's impossible.
Yeah, it's really
you know?
Sad because I see so many women get so trapped in relationships that, you know, are so destructive. Like, you have your support group for destructive relationship help. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're working with women who really have found themselves in terrible positions because we make
terrible.
Poor choices or the wrong choices.
Yeah.
And then it's so hard to get out once you're in them.
I know, it's so hard. It seems like, you know, people on the outside, it seems so easy.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the face of ridiculous things, you know, like you know, a person being gay, but wanting to stay in the relationship, you think, well, maybe there's a chance, right? Because it's very hard to let go of someone that you love, someone that you're attached to, someone you might have a family with. You just don't walk away from that usually, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
It usually takes a long time. It's a hard process.
Right,
and then
I'm not quite sure why we get hung up in relationships like this that are really destructive, because, you know, we tend to become so attached to people who aren't particularly good to us at all, you know, who make tremendous,
right,
ridiculous demands on us and who can't give you a kind word. You know, they're
right,
living a lie. You know they're living a lie, but you don't want to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, I had a gentleman write to me the other day, and he said, you know, I recognize I'm gay. I told my wife I'm gay. You know, I don't want to keep living this lie. But she said she doesn't care. She's not letting me go. I can do what I want to do, but she does not want me to leave. And I'm thinking, like, I know the feeling of desperation, because I think we all go through it. We go through this bargaining, you know, time.
Mm-hmm.
I call it, what can I live with? You know, how much can I live with?
Yeah.
You know, you make terms and conditions. And I know that with my ex-husband, when I first had wind, of course, I didn't understand gay, you know, back in the 60s
mm-hmm.
and 70s and 80s. What do we understand?
Right,
I was brought up thinking that if you're gay, you go with somebody of the same sex. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's inconceivable to me that you'd want to marry a woman.
Right.
We were not very well informed. And so
yeah.
even if I, and also I grew up in the era of sexual promiscuity back in the 60s. I was in California when everything went with everything. So people were trying things and they either liked it, didn't like it, or that's the way I used to think because I didn't know any differently. So when it came to my ex-husband, when I finally suspected something was going on that was outside the realm, I kept thinking, if I try harder, if I'm a better wife, then he won't have these thoughts. And I
yeah.
think that a lot of us, not understanding what we're dealing with, think that we can just make things better all the time and they'll get better when they don't.
Right. It's amazing when you think about it. You know, that, you know, if you know someone or you know that they're maybe, say, you know that they're gay or you've found them looking at gay porn or maybe
mm-hmm.
they told you or something happened, right? And so, but still, you know, accepting that is a whole other thing, isn't it? Because accepting that means letting go of the dream or the concept you have of your relationship, right? That's not an
exactly.
easy thing to just switch, right? Like, oh, he's
well,
gay, goodbye, you know, it's not what I thought it was. It was like, no, you have this whole history with this person that was different than being gay, that you know, that from what you knew at the time, you have this whole history, and it's hard to wrap the mind around that, isn't it? And accept that.
I'll tell you
that.
What's harder to wrap their mind around, maybe you give some insight into this.
Mm-hmm.
Bad marriages, you know, you expect, but the good marriages are the really difficult ones to accept. Because some marriages, I would say about 20% of them were really good marriages, or so the women thought. They were with
mm-hmm.
their, quote, best friend,
mm-hmm.
who maybe later on down the line brought them home some, you know, sexually transmitted disease. But before that, knowing that, you know, they still felt, this is my best friend. We do everything together. We confide in everything. We go everywhere together. You know, they're in such disbelief. And I think that these women have a much harder time healing because they can't understand how could somebody pretend for so long to love them so much and then they walk away and they don't look back.
Yeah, well, that happens with sociopaths, narcissists, and psychopaths
mm-hmm.
as well. You know, because like, you thought the person was with you in the same way that you were with them, which wasn't the case, but you thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then
right.
and because it wasn't, you know, they could just walk away. They don't have the attachment that you had. And it's so feels so heartless and it's so devastating.
And they have the hardest time accepting it. Like, you know, one young lady I know said, this was my soulmate and he's still my soulmate. No, he's not your soulmate. He's with another man. He's that man's
right.
soulmate.
Right.
I said,
was
what
maybe
was
your
in
good
the past,
friend, but
right?
he was. Yeah.
Right, because these guys can never love you like a straight man can love you because they don't even want you to touch you.
Right.
And I always say in a marriage or relationship, intimacy is the key block that builds on it. That doesn't mean
right.
you have to have
intimacy,
sex all the time, but you have to intimacy, right?
Intimacy is based on trust and honesty. How can you have
mm-hmm.
emotional intimacy if you're lying about who you are. It's impossible. Something, you know.
Well, that's right.
If a woman thinks she can, she's deceiving herself.
And also, I think that emotional intimacy is very, very important. But in any relationship between a man and a woman, physical intimacy is also important.
Right.
I mean, physical intimacy is what builds a relationship so that when you can have it because of illness or problems, you're still okay because you're going to pass it or you've had it or you have a lot to hang on to. But when you never have it to start with, you know, it really strips you of who you are as a woman. And you always feel that there must be something wrong with you that your husband doesn't or your mate doesn't want to have sex with you.
Oh, that
must be awful. So it really strips everything. It is.
Yeah,
it's the worst feeling.
That part of it. I mean, are there, I'm not sure, explain to me if in a relationship, when a woman's in a relationship with a gay man, are there, does it go through cycles or, you know, like does he come in and out, like, you know, kind of to keep her on the hook in a sense? Kind of keeping her off guard about what's happening, or is it pretty much he's distancing? And
pretty much distancing.
Mostly dealing with that. Distancing?
Yeah.
Emotional and sexual?
And physical, especially sexual.
Yeah.
That distancing starts early. You know, they either have a toothache, headache, backache, you know, stress
like
from
right
work.
Right away, right? Almost as soon as.
Well, some of them
very,
very
soon,
quickly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, some of these men, you know, are able to perform when they're in their 20s. It's not what they want to do, but they'll do it for the sake of hoping that they won't have to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very upfront. I always tell people that these men aren't marrying you because they're trying to trick you. They're marrying you because they don't want to be gay. And they're hoping that if they marry you, then those feelings will go away. I mean, 95% of men do it with good intentions. It's just that they shouldn't do it. You know, if you have doubts about yourself or you feel these gay feelings, feelings are not going away. And loving
and
a woman
if you don't
is
do
not going to make
it away. Right. And even if you're not doing it consciously, it's still having the same damaging effect.
Right. Because these men, after a while, what happens is that the tables turn and they start feeling trapped by you. And they do feel trapped because they're not living the life that they were destined to live, and they turn it on you, even though they courted you, they asked you to marry them, they want you to love you, they wanted to bring children into the world with you.
Right.
But by the time they're in their 30s and 40s, then they don't want you, and they start resenting you, and they start treating you very unkindly, and then they'll blame you for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart hurts so much for women who try scrubbing their bodies because their husbands tell them that they smell. Or they can't get next to them because their breath smells. And they don't know any differently. So they sit there crying and torturing themselves and going for surgeries and breast implants or breast reductions, gastric bypasses. Because their husbands say, if only you were thinner, or if only you were heavier, if only you had bigger breasts. You know, they'll do everything. And nothing's going to change it. So that's where my issues come in. If you make a mistake, it's understandable. But you try to fix it. You don't try to make it worse.
And how would that happen? I mean,
by being
what would
honest.
Be the best case scenario? Kind of
I always
at
tell
some
men,
point,
be honest.
Early
tell
on,
your wife
just kind of.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You have to cut your losses early because the longer you stay in this relationship. And I tell men, you say you love your wife, but how do you think she feels when you won't touch her? Don't you think she feels there's something wrong with her? And they tell me, well, you know, I tell them it's not your fault, but nobody believes that after a while.
No.
These women just feel so stripped down, both physically, sexually, emotionally. And the longer they stay in these relationships, the worse it gets.
Sure, and that's got to have some long-term deleterious effects on how someone, I mean, feeling ashamed of your body, feeling rejected.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to
definitely.
Be pretty long. I mean, that's got to, you know, once the relationship ends, it's got to still have a, I mean, is it hard for women to get into a relationship after the gay?
Well, it's hard for them to get into a good relationship because I tell women it's like recovering from any other problem that people go through recovery, whether it's for drugs or for alcohol. You have to put your life back on track. You have to get to learn who you are because you've lost that in these marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And I know these women feel so rejected because they are living with men who have rejected them, some for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, a lifetime of rejection and making you feel inadequate. So a lot of women want to now rush out there and find somebody to love them. And so any man who finds, you know, gives them a little bit of, you know, crumbs there that are a little more than the crumbs they were getting, you know, they jump for. And they're not ready.
Right.
You know, they
right,
go out
yeah.
and they get hurt.
Sometimes people
you know, they find
rush,
a different kind of
predator.
They're
getting older. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And but you can't rush out and let somebody, I mean,
oh, no.
you're so damaged.
I haven't found one
relationship
that has
Exactly.
I haven't found one relationship
yeah.
that works. I call it, you know, look, if you want to go out and you want to have sex because you feel that you're needy, go do it. But just don't get emotionally entangled with somebody until you get to know even who you are. And until
right.
you get to learn to love yourself. Because if you don't love yourself and make yourself number one, you'll never come first to anyone else.
That's right.
Men know
That's
when
right,
you're
yeah.
not gonna when you're gonna give in to them. You know, you mm-hmm. wanna be a strong woman so you don't repeat your mistake.
Right. You want to learn to love yourself so you know what love feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can recognize it when it's coming at you next time, or recognize when it's not coming at you.
And then there are women like me. I mean, I waited 11 years until I was ready to open my heart again. I didn't care about finding
mm-hmm.
a man. I had to raise my children. They were babies. I had to go to school. I only had a GED back then. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
that
I had to
awesome.
Go to college and graduate school, you know, raise the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
mm-hmm.
happy. I didn't feel I needed a man to, you know, raise my kids. So I wanted to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also really scared. You know, I also had no sexual confidence. You know, even though I was married before, even though I had plenty of other relationships, but somehow that
mm-hmm.
last relationship just did me in.
Mm.
So that happens with a lot of women, too. They just don't feel like they learn to be happy with themselves, and they're just not looking to meet anybody, and that's fine, too,
yeah.
I tell them.
Yeah.
You have to be happy
yeah.
with yourself, right?
You do.
So, Marianne,
yeah.
let's talk a little bit about
you're in a relationship.
Absolutely. But maybe you can talk a little bit about post-traumatic stress disorder, because many women are under the misconception, although it's getting much better now, that you know they feel guilty saying that they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder because they weren't in the service, you know, they didn't
yeah.
get injured in a war, and they think that's just what it's about, but it's not, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I'd love to do, Bonnie? I'd like to take a survey of symptoms that people experience. Having
mm-hmm.
been in a deceitful relationship, and I would almost guarantee you that all their symptoms would be the same because it's post-traumatic stress. But there are two kinds of trauma that happen in these relationships. The post-traumatic stress, as people know it, that kind of traumatic shock that happens that is so completely disorienting, and you think like flashbacks and nightmares. And reliving the event, you know, that's more likely to happen at the time when you find out your husband is gay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been living, you know, thinking things were all one way for maybe a number of years, and then suddenly you find out things were not what you thought. It's like your whole reality gets turned upside down. That would be the post-traumatic stress as we think about it, you know, like that major
mm-hmm.
shock. That really, you know, it's so upsetting and not only disorienting and shocking, it can knock you for a loop for a long, long, long time, and it disrupts trust, like you said, you know, your sense of trust, your sense of balance, your sense of safety. Everything kind of goes away after that, okay? Now, does that sound like what happens after someone finds out their husband is gay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one kind of... That's post-traumatic stress that goes with something like that. Because post-traumatic stress is not just necessarily a threat to your physical body, but to your it can be a psychological threat, and this is a psychological threat. And what comes with what's a part of post-traumatic stress is a feeling of helplessness when the event happens. And, of course, something like this, you are helpless because it's something way beyond your control, and you haven't been able to prevent it from happening. But then there's another kind of trauma, okay, what we described is what they call big T trauma, and it happens from
uh-huh.
a big event, okay, whether physical or psychological threat. But then during the relationship, it sounds like all these women are experiencing what they call small T trauma, And those mm-hmm. are things like part of that is the impact of deceit. You know, mm-hmm. When someone you're living with is leading a double life, it's registering subconsciously, but you might not understand what's going on consciously, but subconsciously you probably are. It's probably registering and making you feel anxious and maybe off guard and uneasy all the time, like an ever sense, shifting sense of reality. You know, it's kind of always can make you feel a little anxious and or depressed. And then there are other features of small T trauma, what we call small T trauma. It's like when you feel like maybe you're crazy and there's a lot of self-doubt, and if the person is abusive or controlling, you might have numbness or spaciness or dissociation in order to endure it, denial, mm-hmm. you know, all those things. Are eroding who you are along the way, and in that you lose yourself. This is what you were mm-hmm. talking about before, how you lose yourself in that kind of environment. It's very similar. I mean, if you can, it's easier to conceptualize if you think of a child, right?
Right.
A child in a household where they're not getting like positive attention and love, and their parents aren't, you know, mirroring who they are and being attuned to them. But the parents maybe are ignoring them or constantly controlling or correcting them or being loud or angry at them. It's easy to see how over time a child getting those messages every day is going to break down. They're going to become anxious. They're going to become depressed. They're going to have poor self-esteem. Well, the same thing can happen to an adult in a relationship like that. It's mm-hmm. like being in a, you know, this sounds a little extreme, but it might be a little bit like being in a prisoner of war camp, you know. You know, on a daily basis, you're getting, mm-hmm. you're getting neglected. You're getting bad messages about yourself. You don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen. You know, those kinds of things really take their toll and wear down your body. You wear you down mentally, and they wear you down physically. There's a lot of physical ailments related to those kinds of environments.
So even though you don't necessarily see the direct abuse, like somebody would be beating you,
right.
And that would hurt your physical condition as well. With with emotional abuse, that also can do physical damage to you, even though you don't see the physical damage, but it affects how you feel, which affects
yes.
your immune system. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because it's happening so often.
Right.
I mean, you know, each relationship is different, right? You might have someone who just is ignoring you every day, or you want to have sex with them, and they're saying no or giving an excuse, and you feel that sense of rejection or that you don't matter. That
mm-hmm.
that creates a physical reaction in our body, right? Think about
mm-hmm.
it. What is the physical reaction you feel when someone you love rejects you or doesn't want you or
mm-hmm.
looks at you with disgust, for instance, or yells or screams at you? Then your body will go into fight or flight, you know, because you get panicky and or maybe, you know, you feel like there's some deceit going on, but you can't put your finger on it, and you always feel a bit uneasy or a little worried or anxious. You can see how, like, all of these things will have an effect on the body as well.
Exactly, and I think that women don't understand that concept either, that it may not be immediately physically dangerous, but it will be in the long run because it will affect how you feel physically as well as mentally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are more illnesses reported when people are in relationships like that. There's more stress-related symptoms, sometimes things like adrenal fatigue or chronic fatigue
mm-hmm.
or, sometimes autoimmune diseases. These things even research has shown that some of these things have happened as a result of prolonged stress, prolonged exposure to stress. Not to mention STDs, but that's a whole other thing.
Exactly. And that really takes its real toll on our women as far as becoming sexually active again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have women in our group with HIV. And,
oh, boy.
You know, it really impacts their future relationships, herpes. You know, even though they say, well, it's not as dangerous as some of these others, still it's an embarrassment. And
mm-hmm.
it still makes you do think, you know, have to take precautions. You wouldn't then maybe not enjoy it as much as you would have otherwise. So,
right, and people are very ashamed of it and afraid to tell people, right?
Exactly, and I don't blame
really
them.
Really afraid.
I would feel
to
ashamed
tell people.
Too, even though it's not
yeah.
my shame, but it's given to me, and so you would feel ashamed.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's easy to rationalize it, but when it happens to you, it's a whole other story, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So how can your app help people? Let's talk about your wonderful, wonderful app.
Well, in order to heal, you know, to heal from these kinds of traumas,
mm-hmm.
Healing from trauma goes through the body. You're familiar with the concept of mindful connection, mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Mindfulness means being connected to your body. Or to your emotion, which is in your body, all of the things that are going on inside of you, and to learn how to be comfortable being inside of yourself. Okay, that would be mindfulness. There are different
mm-hmm.
things that can help mindfulness. One would be meditation, and these are all proven by lots of research. Meditation helps. They use it a lot for veterans, and they've done a lot of research on it because it changes the brain waves, you know, meditation does, and it opens new neural pathways in the brains, and it helps the brain to heal from the trauma. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So something like meditation, yoga, exercise, martial arts is good for empowering feeling. Hypnotherapy, and one of the things my app helps people to be mindful in the moment. It works on triggers of post-traumatic stress or emotional triggers, meaning when you feel some overwhelming or very negative emotional state, or when, let's say, you're thinking back and regretting what the life choice you made, or feeling the hurt. Any kind of negative state, the app helps you to break down what you're internally experiencing so you can mindfully connect to it. And
mm-hmm.
then it has ways for you to then do different other types of activities to help change your negative state to a more positive state. And that builds neuroplasticity in the brain, opens new neural pathways, and helps to heal. But, you know, this is a very gradual process, but anytime you can shift from a negative state to a more positive or more empowered state, just a little bit, it makes you feel a little bit more empowered and helps heal a little bit. So the things that you have to practice every day, some kind of mindful practice every day, will, number one, help heal the trauma, but it will also help you to reconnect to the lost self, you know, when you lose yourself in these things. These relationships. Maybe you didn't have a big, great self to begin with. So, but in order to find yourself or re-find yourself, you have to be able to just be connected to yourself. And I know that sounds simple, right? It sounds like obvious. But when you're in stressful situations, we tend to kind of weirdly exit our bodies.
Objectivity, exactly.
Yeah, we just
kind
of spin around in our heads.
Yeah, but I think another point that I loved about this app when you first told me about it was the fact
mm-hmm.
that, let's say you're going to a therapist, you have a weekly appointment with a therapist while you're getting yourself back on track, and if
mm-hmm.
things happen during the week, you know, that before you can see your therapist, you can keep a total record of this so that when you get to your session, you're able to discuss what it was that was upsetting you so much, right?
That is true. The app keeps a history, you know, keeps everything in there that you input, and which you can send, you can email to your therapist, or you can even email to a friend or to a sponsor
mm-hmm.
if you're in a 12-step program. It keeps an archive and a history. And also there are screens to help you review your week so that you can see your progress. their daily preparation. You know, it's very important in here. Well, first of all, when you said, okay, let's say you see a therapist once a week. Okay, once a week is okay, but in order to really change something, it takes focused attention. In order to change your brain's neural pathways, you have to focus on every day on whatever it is you're trying to heal or change. So that's where that app can help. There was something. Oh yeah, and then their daily preparation visualization of how you want your day to be, or how you want to see, you know, what it is you want to do that day to feel better with yourself or love yourself or whatever. The app helps you with that. And it also helps with lifestyle goals. So it has, you know, quite a few things in there.
And not only does it have a lot for you to do, but, you know, Marianne always laughs at me when I tell her when I first sent out the cost of the app. And it said $2.99. And I thought, well, it sounds like a really dynamite app, but it's a little costly, isn't it, Marianne? And he said, well, you know, after charge, she said, $2.99, I didn't think it was too much. Do you think so? I said, $2.99? I said, you've got to be kidding me. It sounded like it should cost $300, but...
yeah.
And it's a one-time fee, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm just so technologically behind the times that that's why I wasn't familiar with apps. But I think that's such a wonderful cost. And how do people get this app?
Well, they go into your app store if you have an iPhone or iOS device, or your Google Play if you have an Android, and search for Mind Warrior.
And that's Mind, M-I-N-D, and then the word Warrior.
M-I-N-D and Warrior, right.
And you have that on Facebook, right?
Yeah, it's also, you can find it on Facebook and Instagram.
And on Facebook, is it, do you just put in Mind Warrior and they'll get a pic? Is that how it works? I can try it real fast.
Actually, on, yeah, it should. Are you trying it now?
Yes, I am. I want to make sure. Mind Warrior.
Let me see if I...
Okay, so it says Mind Warrior and... there's a lot of listings here for Mind Warrior. No, I know what the problem was. I had Wind Warrior. You know, not only is my spelling questionable, but my typing lately is really questionable. Here it is right there. Page is Mind Warrior.
Right.
All you have to do is type in Mind Warrior with an M and not a W, and then you'll come to the beautiful page showing the design. And can they buy it from here?
No, you have to buy it in the App Store or Google Play Store.
Okay, but it says here, on your page of Mind Warrior, there's a little button for Google Play and another one for iTunes. So they could click into these pages, right?
Yes, yep.
Right.
You can get,
I don't quite know all the terminology.
I'm sorry,
but
I haven't
I can
even...
click in somewhere.
Yep.
But I
click,
think this is a wonderful opportunity. I know that somebody, one of our members, told me that they had downloaded this app last year when you were on, and they said it was just amazing, you know, how much they could do with it.
Oh, I'm glad. Good.
Yeah, I mean, people really
help
are benefiting from this. Oh, you help many people. Now let's talk about your destructive relationship help.
Okay. Can I just say one other thing about healing trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two
Absolutely.
Quick things. One is that if for post-traumatic stress, you can't necessarily heal it just by talking about it. So if you're in therapy, sometimes you can, even if you have a therapist that you really like but they don't do things with PTSD, you might find an adjunct therapist to do a few, you know, some techniques just specifically for the PTSD, like EMDR or somatic experiencing or sensory motor psychotherapy. Maybe I could send you these things if people wanted to, you know, write
That'd
them down.
That'd be great.
Neurofeedback is another one. There's like several different, there's a bunch of ones that are specifically for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And also just mindfulness, you know, mindful practice, yoga. Did I mention yoga? Has been researched to be almost better than therapy. they've done some research on it, and the people that did just yoga who had trauma versus ones who did therapy, the yoga helped them and healed them much faster than therapy.
I can believe that.
Because yoga is very mindful.
Wondrous things.
Yeah. And the other thing that's very important is support. And that's why what you have going on, Bonnie, is so great.
Mm-hmm.
For the women going through this, because support mm-hmm. does actually, you know, eye to eye contact and being with other people, or just being in a, you know, however you have groups or when you get
mm-hmm.
people together for your retreats, those kinds of things are healing. You know, people are human species are a social species, and we tend to heal better with other people. Just social connection. Is healing in the brain.
And I agree, especially when you
that.
Feel like you're the only one, and you're isolated, nobody understands you. That's the
mm-hmm.
wonderful thing about our retreats is that in our healing weekends, you come there, you don't have to say a word. Everybody knows exactly what you're feeling. Nobody
mm-hmm.
questions you. Everybody supports you. People aren't saying, well, were we stupid, or you didn't see it, or you don't get the same kind of feedback that you get from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in the same boat,
yep.
and we all heal at different paces, but we all understand that healing process. But could
mm-hmm.
some of our women join into your group for the destructive relationship group?
You mean the online one or the
mm-hmm.
live one or both? Yeah, sure.
Either way,
of course.
Both.
Yep.
So if they want
Absolutely.
To join online, what's the next step?
Oh, they go to destructiverelationshipshelp.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they scroll down to the services section and click
okay.
on the highlighted online live chat. Oh, no, it doesn't say online. It says live chat support group. Sorry. And
only
that will take
group,
them
okay.
to the information on when the next chat is or to the chat if it's at the time of the chat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can contact Marianne through this. There's a whole page here where
That's
you can
true.
Also send, you know, a message, and so, you know, you will get back to them, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
yes,
you know
I do.
How to do this. I love this website. It's really beautiful. It's very
Thank
peaceful
you.
Looking. So even if you don't want to join the support group, you can just sit here and watch this with the water. It's
you can
very
watch the
peaceful.
The New Jersey Shore.
Oh, I love it. Beautiful. So if any of you need further information, just write to me at bondk@aol.com and just put in there, you know, information about Marianne or about, post-traumatic stress, PTSD. Put down anything and I'll get the message. And then, of course, I'll get you back in touch with Marianne. Now, where are the meetings held?
The live meeting is held in, central northern New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you're in that area... That's another option for you. And also, do you do private counseling too?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so
I have
counseled
women who have been with gay men.
Mm-hmm.
And men who've been gay men who've been in relationships.
Mm-hmm. So Marianne certainly
mm-hmm.
understands the situation. She's been part of our network for a few years. She's also part of Donna Anderson's network. That's how, you know, I first ran into Marianne. And she does articles for, you know, lovefraud.com. And many of our women are familiar with Donna's work. So if you need more information or you want to get more information about the app, just write to me or get in touch with Marianne through her website at destructionrelationshiphelp.com. And Marianne, thank you so, so much for being with us tonight. You always shed, you know, wonderful insight for our women who really need the encouragement.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Don't worry, I'll be bugging you again in a few months. I always love having you here, and I love you. You're really an inspiration
I
to me always.
I love you too, Bonnie. Oh, you're an
Thank you, Marianne.
Inspiration to me. You're my hero.
Thanks.
Okay.
Works two ways. All right, everybody. We'll be back here again next week, and love to all of you, and have a great night, and have a great week.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.